Welcome to the Crude Life Podcast, a podcast that generates positive energy. My name is Jason Spies. I'm an award-winning multimedia journalist and talk show host. And on today's episode, I interview Josh Swanson from Vogel Law Firm. Swanson explains the bizarre lawsuit, with the state of North Dakota continuing to try and obtain mineral rights from several landowners who have owned and been leasing family minerals for generations to energy producers. In just a moment, our exclusive interview with Josh Swanson from Vogel Law Firm. But first, I want to take a moment to remind you good folks to please support our sponsors. They literally keep our lights on. You're walking out. Over the past few months, I've told you about how unbelievable Hatch coaching is. Well, don't just take my word for it. Listen to what Greg Tavine of Emerging Prairies has to say about Hatch coaching.
Yeah, I mean, this guy gets people laughing. He gets people thinking. He's somebody that challenges and inspires. And what I think is so beautiful about Eric is he's real. I think the number one thing that I look for in speakers when we bring them into our platforms is that they're that person 365 days a year. Eric is not just a speaker on a stage. That's who he is at the grocery store. That's who he is when he's at the mall. But Eric is somebody that lives his values each and every day. And I think we can all respect that.
To find out more about Hatch Coaching or to have Eric Hatch speak at your event or company, visit hatchcoaching.com. That's hatchcoaching.com. Or call 701-212-1572. That's 701-212-1572.
Josh Swanson, Vogel Law Firm.
Joined, of course, Josh Swanson, Vogel Law Firm, and he represents some landowners in a case that just seems to never go away in this state. I've talked to you a couple times over the past year and a half, and I thought it went to the Supreme Court, but did I... I don't even actually know what's going on. I saw something about Cass County, and I saw something about how they're going to kick it down from the Supreme Court. I thought I understood law, but I really don't understand law when we're talking about this Lake Sakakawea mineral rights dispute case that just doesn't seem to go away. Tell me, what's going on? Should I be this confused, I guess?
Now, Jason, while you were summing it up there, it reminds me of that old master of witticism, Yogi Berra, and one of his quotes, it's deja vu all over again. And just when we think this thing's wrapped up and concluded, the legislature passed Senate Bill 2134, which the governor signed last April, which codified a new chapter of the Century Code. The Supreme Court this past September ruled in Wilkinson versus State, which the Wilkinsons would be my clients. They ruled that the statute applies, and they remanded to the district court for application of the statute. So there's two parts to that Wilkinson decision. The first part was the Supreme Court saying the Industrial Commission is going to apply the statute. The statute says the pre-Garrison Dam, Lake Sakakawea, Missouri River, the historical river controls under those guidelines. Presumably my clients and all the other private mineral owners will receive the minerals. And the Supreme Court added a second part to that opinion saying, if that doesn't happen and somehow the state ends up with the minerals, in that case, an unconstitutional taking will have occurred and my clients will be entitled to damages, which would run into the millions of dollars for the taking of those minerals. So case closed, doors open and shut, the Supreme Court has spoken, but now we have this group of plaintiffs led by what's so bizarre about it, Representative Nelson, who opposed the bill before the legislature, was on the losing side of that. Apparently, the plaintiffs in this new case, now filed in Cass County, haven't read the Wilkinson decision because now they're trying to challenge the statute. And really, Jason, I don't know where to start with the fundamental problems with this complaint on its face are numerous and glaring, starting with the fact they filed in Cass County, North Dakota, when we have a very specific statute of the Century Code, Chapter 28-04-01, that says venue of actions relating to real property have to be filed in the county where the property is. So, I mean, that's just a starting block, not saying anything of the fact that none of these plaintiffs have standing, and just the fact that they're a taxpayer loan doesn't confer standing upon them. So if it's not one thing, it's another in this case where certain parties just won't let these mineral owners have their day and abide by the decision of the North Dakota Supreme Court.
Now, I'm going to try to do a little history here because this is one of the most crazy stories I've seen come out of the Bakken. And I mean, totally, there's been a lot of crazy stories, but this one just seems, it's like so cut and dry, but yet people are inventing new ways to keep it going. And let's start back in the beginning here, because some people might not quite know what we're talking about yet. But a number of years ago, Lake Sakakawea built a dam essentially for power and a number of other things. And when they built that, they had to flood land. And when that land was flooded, correct me if I'm wrong, the state purchased the surface rights, or the Army Corps of Engineers, somebody's purchased the surface rights, but did not purchase the mineral rights. Am I following this so far?
Yeah, the United States government came in when the United States acquired the property in western North Dakota for the Garrison Project for land that would be flooded by Garrison Dam and Lake Sakakawea. They either purchased or condemned the surface. But individuals like my clients, the Wilkinsons, their grandparents specifically reserved the mineral rights. So for the next 50, 60 years after they reserved those mineral rights, my clients and others had leased those minerals to private oil and gas companies. So far, as far as the historical underpinnings of this case, that's where we started from. That was the jump street.
So let me ask you this, just backing up again here. When those mineral rights, when the oil happened, because apparently nobody was paying attention back in when the Garrison diversion was being built because there wasn't an oil boom. And now when there's an oil boom, everybody seems to be paying attention to everybody. When that happened, the state, at what point did the state step in? Because you said that the Wilkinsons, I believe, were and other clients that had their lands flooded and surface rights purchased by the government. And what did the private landowners then start selling or leasing the mineral rights at that point, and then the state just reversed it? Tell me how the state got involved then, if they were leasing it at one point.
Yeah, the state had never released it the state had never claimed it until horizontal drilling made those minerals incredibly valuable when the Bakken boom began here about a decade or so ago. So my clients, like the Wilkinsons and then Ed Lynch, who originally hails from the Williston area, and many others just like them, their parents and grandparents, going back to 1950s when the first Iverson well was drilled by Tioga, they have leases going that far back. And throughout the years, throughout the decades, you know, the grandparents would lease the minerals, and then another company would come in and renew those leases, and then the parents would lease the minerals. And through the years, where up until 2006 for the Wilkinsons, that was when they most recently executed a lease. But then at some point, whoever it was, I don't know, and that's kind of been one of the where the rubber meets the road in our litigation, is who from the state had the bright idea to try to claim these private mineral rights after private mineral owners had leased them for the better part of half a century, and decide, oh, well, no, wait, we claim those, the state, we claim those. Well, I think you hit on it, Jason, because you don't need to be a constitutional law scholar, and you really don't even need to be a lawyer to understand the fact that the government can't take private property without compensating the landowner for it. That's basic 101 constitutional Fifth Amendment takings law. And like I said, it's very, very plain on its face. There's not a lot of nuances there. And what courts have said time and time again, and the North Dakota Supreme Court relied on these decisions and the Wilkinson's decision, including a United States Supreme Court decision, recognizing the fact that the government cannot flood private property and then claim ownership of that property. That's so offensive to the Fifth Amendment. But yet, Representative Nelson and Paul Sorum and several others persist in trying to say that the state owns something that they never owned, ever.
You might not know this, but to me it just seems like the state really wants this money. And is this money tied to something?
You know, that's a good question, and I would say on something like this, I mean, I think that's the impetus of it. These mineral rights are very, very valuable, and the state didn't claim them for, you know, like I said, decades, until all of a sudden we have horizontal drilling and you can get to those mineral rights, and it just so happens the minerals under Sakakawea are very, very valuable. You have the Atlanta super pad that Continental has right by the Highway 85 bridge there near Williston, and you know they've got, oh, last I checked, 6, 7 or more wells that were pumping from that one pad. So I think you're absolutely right that the impetus for this is the money. The frustrating part is that the constitutional implications are so very clear on their face, and yet we have someone else now, a representative in our state legislature, who opposed the bill that passed the legislature by overwhelming margins, was signed into law by the governor, was validated by the North Dakota Supreme Court, and now they bring this complaint trying to dredge up something that should just be put to rest.
Do your clients have any harassment charges that could be pending against the government at this point? I mean, honestly, as I'm sitting here listening to this story, this is one of the most disturbing stories I've heard in the last decade coming out of this state.
Yeah, and as someone who's, you know, as familiar with anybody, as someone who's as familiar with the Bakken as anyone, Jason, I mean, you've seen everything. I've seen a lot, being an attorney out there and having the majority of my cases venued in Williams, McKenzie, Montreal, Stark, you know, Divide, Burke, etc. This is the single greatest case of injustice that I've ever seen. And the fact that, you know, me personally, someone who's born and raised in North Dakota, grew up in Benson County, educated at Mattock High School, did my undergrad at North Dakota State, we put a lot of faith and trust in our public servants, and we expect them to do right by us. And now my clients, for 4 years, it was February 2014, they came into my office at Vogel Law Firm with this case, and that's when we took the case and we started fighting. And just when we think we get resolution from the North Dakota Supreme Court, which is the supreme law of the land in North Dakota, they're the highest court, they say what the law is, they interpret the law, that's constitutionally the powers that are delegated to them. That was vindication for our clients, and we thought this thing had been put to rest. But now, you know, getting back to your question, there is a mechanism under the law. It's called Rule 11, where if a lawsuit is frivolous and meritless, which, you know, we believe the most recent complaint is, a party can send a demand letter to whoever filed the suit saying that this complaint has no merit. We request that you withdraw it under Rule 11. If you don't, we'll file a motion to seek sanctions. The problem here is that this complaint impacts my clients. This complaint tries to undo what the Supreme Court ruled in Wilkinson and what the North Dakota legislature did. But the plaintiffs didn't name my clients as defendants. They named the state, the Board of University and School Lands, the Industrial Commission, the governor, and the attorney general. Now, I'm not going to sit here with you and presume to tell any other lawyer how to conduct their business or what they ought to do. What I can tell you is if my clients would have been a named party to this complaint, yesterday we would have sent, the same day it was filed, yesterday, we would have sent a Rule 11 letter to the attorneys for the plaintiffs and the plaintiffs demanding they withdraw the complaint. And if they didn't do that within a week, we would file a motion to dismiss and a motion for sanctions. And it's my hope that the defendants in this case do that. This case has no business being filed, let alone being filed in Cass County. The North Dakota Supreme Court has spoke on the matter. Judge Jacobson, who is the district court judge that has this case, the remand is in front of him with regards to the application of the survey review. So it would be my hope that this will be taken care of in short order, but make no mistake, we're paying very close attention to it and monitoring the situation, and if my clients need to intervene in this, we are fully prepared to do so.
I'm going to compare this to a story back in North Dakota from about 10 years ago, and since you're from the state, I think you'll understand this. What I'm having a really hard time with is this, just, again, I go back to the harassment, and it just seems like picking on people, where whenever the government gets involved, something like this, I like to just say, okay, if we took away the unlimited checkbook from an individual, like a lot of these representatives seem to think they have, and I'll give you an example in just a second. But if we took away the unlimited checkbook of attorneys and resources that they seem to really have to pursue and move things along, would this lawsuit continue? Now, the example I want to give is the UND nickname. That was something that a group of legislators would not give it up, even when, listen, you know as well as I do, that thing went through about 10 phases. The first 9 were denial. In the last phase, okay, people finally said, okay, the NCAA is not going to allow the University of North Dakota hockey team even to play the University of Minnesota anymore, for crying out loud. Okay, so the majority of the public was okay with it. And then there was a small group, you're probably even from UND as an attorney, that they went down to the NCAA and they said, okay, we wanted to tell you the way we do things in North Dakota. And they spent a small fortune in legal fees. And then the NCAA just looked at them and said, that's great. Go ahead. You guys do whatever you want. You're not going to be invited to our NCAA with the nickname. So in the end, they had to change it. And we always talked about in the media, would the legislatures, the people who were behind that, would they have continued this if they had to pay for it out of their own pocket? I go to Representative Nelson right now, and I think the same thing. If he had to pay for this out of his own pocket, is he? Is the state paying for this? Who's paying for all of this? And I don't know if I went out of line on the UND nickname. You're probably alum for all I know. You're probably still supporting them with the old stuff. I don't know.
Looking around my office, Jason, I can tell you that it's covered in North Dakota state paraphernalia, and I'm actually just fresh off getting back from Frisco, where the Bison won their 6th title in 7 years, and I did my law school at Creighton Law School in Omaha, but we do have the majority of our attorneys here at Vogel were educated at the University of North Dakota and are very, very fine lawyers, some of the best lawyers in their practice areas in the state. So I'm very familiar with that litigation. I followed it, and I think the comparison is apropos from the perspective that in this situation, the state, the Attorney General's office, and now an individual representative is trying to get the state to commit more funding to a lawsuit out of the state coffers, whereas my clients are private individuals, and they've worked hard their entire lives. I mean, these are salt of the earth North Dakotans, like my parents, your parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, folks who grew up here and busted their butt for decades to give their kids a good life and to make something of themselves. And now they're being forced to expend their nest egg, what they've worked so hard for over 4 years. And my clients are paying for this privately out of their pocket and fighting hard for this. And we're up against an entity that has unlimited resources in the state, which is making our clients, and now with Representative Nelson, continue to spend even more money. And if you take a look at the complaint filed in this situation by Representative Nelson and Paul Sorum and several other plaintiffs in paragraph 3C, they are asking the court to have the state pay for their attorney fees. And you have their attorneys, 3 out-of-state lawyers from Edina, Minnesota, coming in here, filing this complaint, and asking a Cass County court to make a decision that's already been decided by the North Dakota Supreme Court and to award these plaintiffs and their attorneys their costs and fees for doing so. And to me, that's just wrong. That's offensive to me. I'm disappointed in that. And it's disappointing because when will it stop for my clients? You know, it's cruel and it's vindictive. After the legislature passed a law that I'll add this, Jason. This law that was passed was supported by mineral owners and oil and gas companies. Not a single person rose in opposition to testify against this bill in Bismarck last year. And you had mineral owners and operators working in unison and cooperating with each other to craft this bill that overwhelmingly passed both the North Dakota House and Senate with huge margins. Okay, then the North Dakota Supreme Court vindicates us and says to my clients, if by any outcome the state ends up with this, that's an unconstitutional taking and you're entitled to compensation. And now we have a representative of state government trying to get the state to commit more resources to a lawsuit against the state. So it's going back to it. You mentioned it's one of the most bizarre things to come out of the Bakken, and I think that's the very accurate way to describe it, because I'm hard-pressed to think of any sort of legal battle that has gone on with all the twists and turns like this one when there should be finality to it.
You know, I think what really gets me about this whole thing is, in my business, in the media world, at some point, and take LeVar Ball, for example, the blowhard dad for the Los Angeles Lakers son. I forget the kid's name. I can't forget the poor kid's name. He was the second overall pick, but his dad takes all the press. And what I can't get is why anyone gives this guy the time of day. His shoes were a flop. He's an F by the Better Business Bureau. He hasn't made one prediction right. He's wrong on a lot of the stuff he does. Why pay attention to him? Because why? Because he can? Because he's got your attention? I just don't get it. And I want to look at this the same way. Josh, you're an attorney. I get it. In the private practice, sometimes you got to take any case you can. But if you're with the state, isn't there a certain amount of ethics and leadership that need to come into play here, where the state's got to say, now we got to take a stand. The Supreme Court's spoken, and this is not a legitimate case. This is kind of like the lady that spilled, you know, warm coffee on her foot.
Yeah, and I think that's the critical distinction with the comparisons with Lonzo Ball and LaVar Ball and everything. I think what strikes me about it is, a private practice attorney, you know, I have real clients, and they're paying their hard-earned money. So when I'm, you know, people kind of joke about attorneys and bills and everything like that. But to me, growing up in Mattock, North Dakota, you know, class of 18 in high school, no stoplights. When I'm in my software program, and after I do work for a client, and I'm clicking on what their bill is, that's real money to me, because I grew up in a working-class family. So I understand that my clients are committing a lot of resources to cases. The state doesn't have to worry about that, but on the other perspective, what the state ought to worry about is being good stewards of the taxpayers' funds for North Dakota. And at a certain point, enough is enough. I mean, there have been so many resources committed to this, and this thing was, I can't think of a single other case, Jason, that was fought out in the legislature and the courts. And, you know, I read a quote by Representative Nelson in an Associated Press story saying, this didn't belong in the legislature, it belonged in the courts. The North Dakota Supreme Court decided that, and yet he wants to continue pushing this, and he can't escape the fact, you know, he purports to bring it as a private citizen, but he's a representative of the state legislature. He had a dog in this fight. He opposed it, and he lost. And at some point, you just have to say, you know what? We fought the good fight, or what we thought was a good fight. The fight went against us, we lost, and we will respect that. We will respect what the Supreme Court said, and we will respect what the legislature said. And that's not happening here, and that's what makes it so frustrating and disappointing for me and my clients, because at some point there should be finality, and we're sitting here with one of my clients' mothers who's in her 90s at a care facility in Bismarck. And a big part of what my clients, what the family wants, is to be able to get conclusion and finality to this, so they can tell their mom that it's done, that the minerals that her parents had back in the 1940s that they were farming while her two brothers were serving our country in World War II, that they can tell her that this is over. And every time we think we get to that point, we have something like this complaint come up where we have to respond to it and have phone calls like this. And I'm glad we're having this conversation, Jason. I've had several like them in the last few days, but it's a conversation I'd rather not have, because it means that this fight is still ongoing and my clients can't get that peace that they're entitled to.
So Representative Nelson has brought this, trying to resurge it from the dead, basically from the Supreme Court's decision. And let's say he's unsuccessful once again. Who pays for all this? I mean, are your I know you're not doing this pro bono. I mean, or maybe you are, but are your clients, are they going to turn around and then look at the state and say, you know what, you owe me now?
Yeah, and you know, that's a great question. And what we had tried to do at the legislature during the session was actually try to include language in the bill that would allow private minerals like my clients who have led this fight to have these private mineral rights vested in the private mineral owners, and to recognize that the state never had any sort of ownership interest. Ultimately, I think we would have got that through the House and through the House Appropriations Committee. We had several members on House Appropriations and on Energy and Natural Resources that were really champions for us, that really went to bat and really fought. But when the shovel hit the dirt, my understanding is that there were certain elements on the Senate side who were uncomfortable with that language, so it was stricken from the ultimate bill that became law. But if this persists, we will go to the legislature, and it's been done before. There have been cases where the legislature has awarded folks attorney's fees when there was a wrong like this pressed against them. We will absolutely request that, because I think it's only fair. I mean, it's a matter of fundamental fairness when there's individuals from the state making private citizens spend their hard-earned money on something like this year after year after year. There has to be some sort of remuneration where they recognize that there might have been a dispute, the dispute was decided, but when certain entities from the state keep pushing that fight, you're damn right there should be some sort of mechanism where my clients don't have to keep footing the bill for this.
Well, that's why I brought up discrimination and harassment earlier, that sort of thing, because, again, I go back to, if you take the government out of it, are these people who have access to all those resources, like Representative Nelson, are they going to keep doing this? Are they going to foot this bill out of their own pocket? Do you think anybody in the private world would go up to a judge and say, I own those lands, I really don't have any proof, but, and the other people have proof, but, you know, I actually have that money tied to something else, so I need that land. I mean, I know I'm speaking stupid, but that's really what I just heard from the last half hour of us talking.
Yeah, it's, you know, I'll go back to that Yogi Berra quote. It's deja vu all over again, and it feels like a really bizarre nightmare, or even, you know, Groundhog Day with Phil Murray, where Phil Murray keeps reliving that same move or that same day over and over and over again, and there's a certain element to that here. And I can't speak for the plaintiffs, obviously. I can't say what motivates them. What I can tell you just in general from my experience is private parties, if they were footing the bill for something like this out of their own pocket, I don't think we'd be at this point. Now, is it possible that some of these plaintiffs are writing checks out of their own pocket? I suppose it is, and it's tough for me to really comment on that. But I think this is a situation where if you'd had private litigants on both sides, this thing would have been done and over years ago.
Oh, I think it would have stopped at the Supreme Court. I'm fairly certain of that. I mean, generally, when something goes to the Supreme Court, that's it. I mean, that's it. I didn't even know you could do anything after that. It'd file a file 7 hours away in a different court system.
Yep, and I'll say this. You know, every attorney that's been practicing in North Dakota, by and large, you know, the vast majority of us, you know, we have wins and we have some losses. It's kind of like being a football coach. You know, you don't win every single game, you know, even if you're really, really good, you have a loss now and then. But I think uniformly, any lawyer that is ethical, you know, there's decisions that have been issued by courts that I don't agree with, that have went against me. But at the same time, you can disagree with the decision, but you ought to respect it, because ultimately that court is the body that has the authority to make that decision. So there should be deference and the appropriate amount of respect giving to these legally binding decisions by the Supreme Court. And I would have hoped that the plaintiffs in this case, why they seem to be disregarding the Wilkinson decision. Like I said, you take a look through the 20-odd pages of their complaint, and they cite all kinds of case law. They cite the Reap decision back from 2013, But nowhere in that single decision do they cite the Wilkinson case that renders what the bulk of their complaint has to say totally moot because the Wilkinson case has decided it already.
Josh Swanson, Vogel Law, just wrapping up here with him. What's next for you guys? I mean, obviously you got some more court dates ahead of you, I guess. But what's next for you guys in terms of this whole legal battle with the state?
Well, we'll continue to monitor the case in Cass County here, and we're prepared, if need be, to file a motion to intervene in the case. Right now, it's between the plaintiffs and the state of North Dakota, but obviously, as we've discussed here over the last half hour or so, it has implications for my clients and other private mineral owners. So if there comes a point where we need to intervene here in the next 3 weeks or so, we are prepared to do that. So we'll keep an eye on that. And outside of that, the Supreme Court remanded it to the district court to apply the statutory survey review. We feel that that survey review will ultimately come to the conclusion, just like the United States Corps of Engineers did when they acquired the property, the surface for Garrison Dam, back in the late 1950s, that our client's property, their minerals, their surface, was outside of the historical river. Ergo, the Corps of Engineers acquired it. Our clients reserved the minerals. So my sincerest hope is that sometime in 2018, we'll be able to close the cover on this book. Our clients will get their funds that have been held in suspense, and we can put it to bed. But until then, you know, we have an eye on it, and we'll keep on fighting.
And that was Josh Swanson with Vogel Law Firm. To listen to this podcast or other podcasts, visit our website, thecrudelife.com. That's thecrudelife.com. And while you're there, be sure to sign up for our weekly Crude Life newsletter. We're also on social media. Check us out on Facebook, Twitter. All the social media links are available at thecrudelife.com. Once again, I'd like you to thank our sponsors, if you wouldn't mind. Check out our sponsors page at the Crude Life Media Network and take a look at who's on there, and you might know someone. Or maybe, better yet, better for us, better for our sponsors, if you need some services in their line of work, we'd greatly appreciate it if you would reach out to our Crude Life sponsors and do some business with them, or see if there's somebody that's a good fit. Let's put it that way, because they keep interviews like this free, and we are so thankful and so grateful that they keep this bridge in the energy industry and other industries together. As the old start to retire and the new come in and the guys in the middle are trying to figure out what's going on, the sponsors allow this energy information bridge to happen. So if you take a moment, check out our sponsors. I appreciate that very much. All right, that's going to do it for this episode. My name is Jason Spies. This is the Crude Life Media Network podcast, and we are generating positive energy. We'll see you next time, folks. Over the past few months, I've told you about how unbelievable Hatch coaching is. Don't just take my word for it. Listen to what Christy Huber, president of the United Way of Cass Clay, says about Hatch coaching.
When you get to know Eric, and he is so willing to share with you how growing up, you know, his life was impacted by an outstanding mom. And the challenges that he may be faced, when he's willing to open up and talk about those things, you're immediately drawn in. And that's that vulnerability that I think that he has publicly said, it's okay to be yourself. And it's okay for you to make mistakes along the way.
To find out more about Hatch Coaching or to have Eric Hatch speak at your event or company, visit hatchcoaching.com. That's hatchcoaching.com. Or call 701-212-1572. That's 701-212-1572.
Since 1979, MBI Energy Services has committed to responsibly growing with today's oil and gas industry by providing proven experience, strategic locations, and integrated services. MBI Energy Services is well established, and its innovation in safety and excellent customer service is what truly makes MBI Energy Services the oil field service professionals. MBI Energy Services, the cutting edge in oil field safety solutions. Learn more at MBIEnergyServices.com.
The music on today's program is written and performed by the Moody River Band. To find out more about the Moody River Band or their music, visit our website, thecrudelife.com, and click on the Musician tab. That's thecrudelife.com, and click on the Musicians tab.
It's a cold draft laying low to the floor. Blankets on the couch trying to keep me warm. Well, that's just part of living here. Snow's falling, wind's starting to blow. The season's drifting up by my front door. Well, life slows down at a few below. You're walking out. People that